Hey there, friendly neighbors. Welcome to the After Show with Mike and Kelly. We are back after a brief hiatus where Kelly was traveling and I was traveling and everybody was every which way but loose. And we're glad to be back with you. I am Mike. As always, I'm joined by my partner in podcast and crime, Ms. Kelly Guimond. Kelly, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. And a little in awe of your throwback reference there. Because that doesn't date us at all as we do this podcast, right?
Not even a smidgen.
Okay.
Takes us back only 30 odd years or so. So we were scheduled to start, well, we were scheduled to record the week of Dub Dub, which did not work, and then we were scheduled to record, I think, last week, or no, was it last week? Was it only, it was only,
I don't
last
remember,
Friday.
But it's just been,
it was last Friday, and I've been in full-on dad mode for a little while now. So last Friday, today as we record this, is Friday, June 21st.
Yes.
last Friday, I was tied up because I was driving elder daughter, aka Lulu, to her summer job as a camp counselor in Massachusetts.
Which is awesome.
Which is awesome, where she's learning to be a ropes counselor. And that's not, you're thinking of the wrong kind of camp. She is a high ropes course counselor. She's helping people on the zip line and on the ropes course and all that stuff. So she's there now, but she has to come back on Sunday night, excuse me, on Monday morning to graduate from high school, which is amazing.
Oh, hey.
But so that means I have to drive up Sunday night, get her Monday morning at the crack of crack, bring her back to Brooklyn so she can go to school and get her, you know, get her cap and gown. Go graduate, go have a big festive dinner, eat some Peking duck with the family. And then early Tuesday morning, I have to drive her back, and then I have to drive myself back to New York. So this is it from Sunday night, Monday night to Tuesday afternoon. So 36-ish hours. We're talking about 11 and a half hours of driving approximately.
Oh my goodness.
Which, you know, peak
you're
dad.
Gonna have to get one of those like beaded seat cushions.
Yes, I have to get one of those. I have to get one of those. And I told Heidi I needed one of those. I told Mrs. Mike, and she's like, no, we don't want one of those. They catch my hair. I'm like, I'm not attaching it for you. It is temporary. I will swing it around to the back of the chair, but I need it. And she's like, yeah. And I'm thinking, I don't even need to go to Amazon for this because I live in a neighborhood that has many, many people who drive for a living. These
yes.
products are findable. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for reminding me of my heart's desire, which is the beady seat cover thingy.
Yes.
I definitely need that. So that was peak dad number one. Peak dad number two is we were going to be... We discussed tonight starting at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern, and we actually got pushed about 15 minutes. And the reason that we got pushed is because my younger child wanted to have the newest Sims expansion pack,
okay.
Sims 4 Island Living,
okay.
installed. Upon the computer.
I don't understand why you have a kid who wants Sims when there's Wizards Unite in the world.
You know,
this is my question.
Neither of my children have said anything about Wizards Unite. The people who've said things about Wizards Unite are people our age, like my sister-in-law.
You should have been there. Nobody was there except for Mac Observer staffers. At 9 a.m. every weekday morning, we have a meeting. And... On Tuesday or Wednesday, it's all a blur now, we had found out that the launch date was June 21st,
mm-hmm.
which is the day that we're recording, which is Friday. And so yesterday morning, we go into the morning meeting, and Andrew Orr, my compatriot over there at TMO, said, "Hey, Kelly, they've already rolled it out a day early." And I went,
what?
Oh my God,
no,
we
what?
Can't
no,
record.
What?
Yeah, it's out. It was supposed to be out this morning. It's been out for like 36 hours now. How do I know? Because I'm like level 7 and I picked a profession and all these things and right. I've been to inns and all the, yeah.
And I know this. I know this because my friend Becca and my sister-in-law Lisa both posted to Facebook within minutes of it going live.
Yes. I am crazy town excited for this. And so today we talked, Andrew and I talked on Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for part of the segment about getting set up, how some of the mechanics work, how it compares to Pokemon Go, etc. I never really played Ingress because it was Android only for so long. I just sort of missed out on it. And I enjoy Pokemon in the like hunting, gathering sorts of aspects of it, you know, but like it was never a thing I cared about. I was always a tiny bit older than the target demo for the card game and the Game Boy game and the cartoon and all that kind of stuff. So Pokemon's neat, but it's not like a universe I'm well versed in or that I care about or anything. Like, I don't know what type anything is. I just sort of catch everything and worry about it later. Catch them all and let God sort them out. And
that's Pokemon Deliverance.
I think it is.
I'm not sure that's an official game, but catch them all.
No.
Catch them all. Now, you know what? Now you know what I want? Got to catch them all, let God sort them out t-shirt.
Such
great merch. Oh, my God.
Now I'm like, wait, I know people who can help make this happen. So with the Harry Potter one, you know, everybody was sort of talking about it like, well, yeah, it's going to basically be Pokemon Go, but Harry Potter flavored. And like, oh, well, it's about time they made a game for Kelly, right? So I'm super excited. I've been playing it as much as possible, and it's a lot of fun, and I'm having a lot of fun doing that. And so, yeah, I'm like, how does anyone play other games when there's Harry Potter Wizards Unite in the world? So,
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, what you can tell me is that when we're done, you're going to give me your friend code so that we can be friends on Wizards Unite.
All right. We'll get right to that. When you said Pokemon Harry Potter flavor, I immediately thought of Birdie Bot's every flavor Pokemon.
Yes.
Alas, earwax Pokemon.
Oh, earwax. Yes.
So, well, I am glad that you are enjoying of the Wizards Unite, and certainly it's something that sounds like the sort of thing I would enjoy, but weirdly, neither of my kids has said a peep about it, which is unusual.
Usually, well, to be fair, I know at least one of them is kind of busy.
True. She's in midair, literally yes. In midair.
And I don't know what the odds are of catching better stuff if you are, in fact, dangling.
Well, there are certain magical creatures that are that way. So is that why there was music playing right before we started recording?
Yes. Because I had to check really quick and see if there was anything interesting happening that I needed to be aware of before
Wizards
we started the show.
Unite. Fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Right. So we'll put that down as the recommendation for the week. So we have all sorts of, well, there's as usual, crappy stuff going on in the world and
yeah.
Also maybe some good stuff. But let's start with the good stuff, or hopefully the good stuff. How was your altconf/dubdub/ time in San Francisco, since we haven't spoken since you were there?
Yeah. Well, part of that is because there was a significant stretch where I could not speak.
Yeah.
Because I did lose my voice. And I believe I did text you at one point a very dark picture of a Salesforce branded rubber bracelet that lights up that I put
yes.
in my hair because it was really hot in the place where we were, where the party was, and I had my hair down, and eventually that just sort of became a danger to others, and so I had to pull it back. And since Salesforce was handing out these little rubber bracelets with LED lights in them, I just stuck it in my hair, and it was great. also, as a short person, it was really nice to not to become much more difficult to miss and overlook. That was also a plus. So, anyway. It was a really weird week. I met a truckload of people. I caught up with a bunch of friends. I got to do an Apple-themed escape room. And I've never done an escape room before. And so getting to do an escape room in the first place was super fantastic.
That's what you have to figure out, how to turn on a Pippin.
Okay, I already know. But also... If that had been it, we would have won in like no time. But it was super duper great. And I am also still feeling the ill effects of this because I ended up coming down with like WWD SARS or something when I got home and was really sick for 3 or 4 days, and my voice just has never 100% recovered. So I'm still not quite at full range. And how sick were you, Kelly? I had to miss Core Audio Karaoke. That's how sick I was.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because I'm like, oh, well, sick. I'm probably contagious. I can't do this to other people. Nobody wants this. So I stayed home. And apparently it wasn't any fun. And so I got like a bunch of text messages about like we would rather risk the infection. It's no fun if you're not here, which was really nice. Aww. But at the same time, like, no, really, you guys don't want this.
Yeah.
So the week. So let me tell you a little tiny bit about the escape room is that it was backstage before the Apple keynote at WWDC 2025. And everything is in disarray. No one can find Tim Cook's clicker. That's not a euphemism. And all of the products have to get on these pedestals that then are going to lift up out of the stage. And so they have to go on in a certain order. And like the whole thing was amazing. Like to plan it all out, there was this Lego model of the stage. So there was all this stuff in this little Lego house model thing that you had to like, and you had to like crack some of that puzzle. There was a keyboard where all the keys got popped off and reshuffled, and you had to, you had to pass a typing test on that. And then there was, a sneak peek of one of the things that they were going to announce, which was the Apple coloring book, which had like all these Apple products in it, and it came with a set of white crayons.
Really?
It was so good. And then so like all this stuff was super duper great. It was a lot of fun. And then so we had to find the clicker, and we had to get all of the devices, all of the things onto these pedestals, but remember they were very heavy. So one of the things that you had to do was find the key that unlocks the chest that has this like super strength suit so that somebody is strong enough to lift these very heavy products and put them on the pedestal. And the products were iMac minis. They were these little tiny boxes with little gumdrop iMacs on the side. They were the cutest. They were not actually heavy, but they were super adorable, and it made me wish that I could get like a little desktop toy sized gumdrop iMac for my desk. It made me very happy.
It sounds delicious.
The escape room was awesome. I really enjoyed it, and I really wish that I could sit down with the guy that built the escape room and just ask him like 900 questions about making all of that stuff work, because like there was a voice assistant, and they said this is the year that Siri gets a name change, and so you have to figure out what the new name is that everyone uses in order to address the assistant, and this is what the new HomePod looks like. So you have to ask the HomePod in the right way to play the product music playlist, and then it plays music with colors in each of the songs so that you know which order to put things on the pedestals. So it played It's Not Easy Being Green, so of course.
Aww.
So I knew that was like so the first one was a little green iMac. Anyway, it was super duper awesome. We had such a good time playing with it. And then also we had the final send off for App Camp for Girls, which was the party on Wednesday, which was hard and also awesome because I was part of the show. So I got to go up on stage and sing a couple of times and play ukulele, but also, it was because it's the end of App Camp, and because it's basically the end of the organization in its current form, and there's not going to be camp anymore, and it's just a matter of like what shape the rest is going to take, basically.
Yeah.
It was weird and hard and sad and frustrating, and but also like really validating that all those people showed up and were like, yeah, you know, we're here, and it's important that we get to do that. That, you know, the mission continues and that kind of stuff. So like it was like all the feels at the same time, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time was just like catching up with people I already know, getting to hang out with folks, trying some new gear. So I got this really nifty, Dave Hamilton and I figured out what my mobile recording setup was gonna look like. Mm-hmm. And so I got these two lav mics, and it's two lav mics together that come down to a single headphone jack.
I have that kit somewhere in a bag. So yeah, it's great.
I just plugged those into my iPad, fired up Ferrite, and recorded people for 10 minutes at a time and talked to them about whatever. And so you can hear when I talk about having lost my voice, you can hear it because I had to record every day. And so you can tell like, oh, that was a Tuesday interview, because it was Monday that I lost my voice bad. And then and so Tuesday I was basically a mess and tried not to talk, but I still had interviews to do. So you can hear like some of them where I'm like, tell me what you thought of the keynote. Right. And then, you know,
it's the inner sanctum with Kelly.
Like, yeah, it really was. And then so you can hear like in varying places, like, oh, that must be when that was. So I got to do some really interesting interviews also. It was super fun to get to talk to folks that I don't normally get to interview, like people I get to talk to a lot, but not necessarily people I get to like ask these sorts of questions of. So Ken Case from Omni Group, totally came through. He came back like, and so he asked, this was, if you really ever want to impress somebody, if they invite you on a podcast, here's like a pro tip for anybody listening to this who also has a podcast, ask them who listens to this show, because like Ken asked me who normally listens to Daily Observations, and I was like, yeah, that's a good question. But like I know who generally is reading Mac Observer, so I'm like, I think it's a, like, I don't have any of the access to any of the like demo or anything like that, if we have any of that information. So I just show up and shoot off my mouth and hit record. That's like my part of the equation. So I told him, like, you know, there's old school people. There are going to be people who are going to appreciate that, like, you were working at Next when Apple bought them, and you know how that worked. And so, like, if you talk about that, you're not going to lose anybody. And he's like, okay. So I ask him a couple of questions, and I get to like question, maybe question two or three. And he said, well, the first WWDC I came to was when Apple bought Next. And I was like,
wow.
And like, I think I did a good job of editing, but there were a couple of dramatic pauses where I sort of forgot I was supposed to be asking him questions because I was just listening. And I was like, I really want to hear, you know. And he was like, yeah, that, you know, Apple was calling developers, you know, at that point, begging people to show up. Would you please come? You know, they were putting crazy kinds of giveaways under everybody's chairs and stuff like that, just so that people would show up. And like, so like hearing about the company that Apple was, you know, 22 years ago, I think is what he said, was the first one that he went to, you know, from then until now, was a fascinating tale, you know, over through time. And it was, so it was super great to get to do all of that. I did learn a ton. I've been watching the videos. I didn't have a badge this year, so I was only able to, I've been able to watch some of the videos. And the one moment that was very exciting to me was Swift UI, which I know they didn't spend a whole lot of time in the keynote, but I think the importance of the stuff that got announced this year is going to be like, the impact is going to be the inverse of what it got during the note. So they spent a whole bunch of time on Minecraft Earth, which is super cool, but I don't think it's going to be the lasting thing that gets remembered from this particular year. This year, I think Swift UI is massive for people who develop anything. And I think the biggest consumer thing is not even going to be dark mode on iOS. I think it's going to be sign in with Apple. And they only spent a couple of minutes on it. And so that's sort of why I was thinking about this, was because I think sign in with Apple is going to end up being the massive thing that came out of this year on the front end, and on the back end it's going to be Swift UI and having everything be declarative. And I mean, I know it was Monday, but they started talking about Swift UI, and it's this declarative language, and look at all the stuff you used to have to do, and then now you can do it with, you know, two sentences. And watching that, I like, my first thought was, oh my God, this is, they just gave us a whole nother day of camp. Oh yeah. So it was so exciting and then kind of sad, like all at the same time. I think the thing that a lot of people are really excited about, that like the developers that I spoke to during the week, who am I kidding? The developers I talked to at the Fairmont and the developers I talked to at Cinnabar, all of them said Swift UI is the massive thing. Swift UI and sign in with Apple, because sign in with Apple means you have an easy way for people to log in securely and you don't have to do anything for it. You just have to include the button and the rest of that stuff all gets handled someplace else. So it's not necessarily up to you. And so there's no data breach associated with that, because you don't have any data on anybody if they're all using sign in with Apple. So that was another piece of that that I think is going to be huge. And they didn't spend a whole lot of time discussing Swift UI or discussing sign in with Apple, but I think those are going to be the two biggest things that come out of it.
Okay. I mean, those, and you know, of course there were the cheese grater introduction, and there was iPad OS and a bunch of other stuff that came out of it. But
and they did talk a little bit about iPad OS, but I think that's going to be another massive thing that come that we just don't know at this point, you know, how huge that's going to be, but I think it's going to be massive.
Well, I mean, as the current user of a you know, couple gen back iPad Pro, I am very curious what that's going to look like for me. I feel like I already don't have a handle on the touch gestures and the other stuff that I'm going to have to learn a whole new language, finger language, of signs and symbols and wonders. Speaking of wizards walking around doing things. So I was in fact working during the keynote. Happens every dang year.
I know.
Every year. It's so weird. Something about one PM on a Tuesday or 1 PM on a Monday, and I'm just inevitably working. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't I be at lunch right now? So anyway, but I'm glad it was overall a positive experience. I know that the bittersweet piece of it with you know, saying farewell to the current incarnation of App Camp for Girls, and you know, for listeners who don't know, I mean, I imagine all our listeners know that you for years, really since the inception of App Camp, have been a key volunteer and a key part of that organization, keeping it going and making it successful. And now, due to a number of factors, including the financial constraints and the challenge of the logistical challenge of putting on these complicated and, you know, very, very challenging to staff events in terms of getting the skills, getting the gear, and getting the people there, all the things you need. The organization is transitioning to support other means, methods, and modalities of the same mission, which is engaging young women and girls in technology, specifically iOS apps, and finding a way to help them learn and help them grow their early stage careers, or just indulge that interest and that, and you know, spark that fire of an interest in technology. So that's what's happening now. So what we're talking about, folks, if you don't know, is that is what's happening. The organization is transitioning. How long was App Camp extant in its first incarnation since Gene McDonald founded it and you were along for the ride?
Yeah, that would be 2013. So, wow. The idea came from 2012. We started building in 2012 and had our first camps in 2013. So 7 years.
Yeah. So a long time.
Yeah. And you know, when you do something, you know, that takes up varying degrees of your time for 7 years, you start to get, it's not muscle memory, but it's like muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it gets to be the middle of May and I start getting antsy about, I got to get my hands on the laptops to make sure everything gets upgraded. It's time to make sure that I've got the right version of iOS on all the devices. How are we going to get the iPads to everybody this year? Do I have everything set up in device management the way it needs to be? And like all those things start sort of going off in my brain. And I have all these things from like last year when I tried to get on top of it, you know, and I set up like, you know, remind me a year from today that it's time to upgrade the machines and all this kind of stuff. And having, you know, set those things up and trying to, and sort of habitually, like that was part of what I did, was made sure that all the hardware was in the condition it needed to be in and in the right state once, you know, so that we could kick off camp and everything. And so it's been weird to sort of have that happen again. Like, it's getting to be time. I need to get the machines out of storage. I'm gonna have to dust everything off. Everything needs wiped down. I'm gonna have to like upgrade all the iPods, you know, this kind of stuff. And then like every time I have one of those, like, oh no, not this year. No, not this year. Hmm. And it doesn't seem to help. So I just keep having them, and it's and like I'm kind of at the point now where it's just sort of frustrating to be like, oh come on, like, you know, I know it's done, but like the back of my brain is just sort of out of habit, right? Like, the weather finally got nice, that means we have to stay inside and upgrade computers. And that's been weird, I guess. And it was a big part of my life for so long. You know, like, I met a lot of people the week I was in California. Just like, people would come up and go, you know, I've seen you talk about App Camp. You know, and I know that you talk about App Camp all the time. I know you're a person who's associated with App Camp. I know you're involved in App Camp in some way, you know, whatever it is. And you know, that's sort of the thing that a lot of people know me for. You know, I do a news podcast 5 mornings a week. Does anybody know me from Daily Observations? No, they all know me because I talk about App Camp all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think that when you have something that's so strongly associated with your brand, and you know, your point about the muscle memory is well taken, that you've got both the people that know you for it, and also the reflexes that you've built up about making sure that things happen and getting them done. So it's a lot, and I'm sorry to see it change. I'm sorry to see it go from what it was to something different. I really do hope that there's a way for the organization to continue, you know, providing value and helping further the mission, even if it doesn't take the form of physical camps.
Well, here's the thing, is that I'm not done. Like, yeah, it's not fixed. So I'm not finished, and I just haven't figured out 100% what that's going to look like yet. So when I do, you know, I obviously will want to tell as many people about it as possible, and I'm sure we will end up talking about it. Because it will be the new thing that makes it so that at points it is really hard for you and I to end up getting to record, because I will hopefully be busy with something else. And I don't know if it's finding more people to build a new thing, or if it's, you know, taking what I know from camp and what I know from having been a non-profiteer to another organization that just needs some help. I haven't figured that out yet. So when I have something to report on that, rest assured I will be reporting on it.
Yeah. Well, and we, speaking for the listeners, I am the Lorax. I'm speaking for the listeners right now. We know whatever it is going to be amazing, and it's going to be a fantastic way to, you know, fulfill your personal mission around this issue, around this cause, which we all feel strongly about, but you know, not everybody gets the opportunity to, you know, take something and make something amazing, which mm-hmm. which you all did. Pouring one out for Camp of the Past. Looking forward to what's next, and you know, and thanks for sharing that. I think everybody who has been following us and you for the past 7 years, you know, needs to know what's up. You know, a big thing has changed. Yeah. There's something dramatic has happened. So we do want to share it, but it's not easy. So thank you for sharing that. We're definitely gonna have the show title be something about Pokemon, Harry Potter Pokemon. Although. Before we started, speaking of parenting, I was telling Kelly that I was trying to order some food for my child, but my child was unable to order food because she had a cat sitting on her. And Kelly's like, what, she can't text from that position? She can't make a phone call? Is it a Faraday cat? which is my Halloween costume for next year, I think, at this point. It's like just tinfoil and whiskers everywhere you look. Well, the other interesting piece of news, I guess, that I wanted to, two pieces of news I wanted to discuss while we have the time. Number one, Apple is apparently being either considering or being encouraged by the chair of Foxconn to move quite a bit of production to Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
In response to economic conditions and potential tariffs and, you know, China trade war situation.
Yes.
And now, neither of us is an international economist, at least that I'm aware of. But
not
I think
lest
that
I
be-
check. No, I'm not even a national economist. I'm not even an economist on a level where I can like speak authoritatively about the economic situation in my house.
I was going to say, are you a home economist? Because apparently not.
I have been known to, but yeah, not often.
Yeah, I recommend economies at home. I think this, you know, partly goes back to the same questions we would ask about Apple moving production of the iPhone, for example, to the United States. The sheer tonnage involved in managing mm-hmm. Apple's supply chains at the scale the company operates, you know, pretty much excludes most places,
yeah.
most countries, or most
there's just not an area,
yeah.
an uninhabited area, or an inhabited area with the kind of capacity,
yeah.
To hold as many majiggers as Apple makes in a year. You know,
and as many people that Apple requires to make them,
right? Because there's all the infrastructure that goes into that, and like that's even assuming that you could take a bunch of people who have been doing this for a long time, who are very good at their jobs in assembling these parts, and get them to go to Taiwan and train other people to do it. Even supposing you could do that, like the amount, like the scale of an effort of that size boggles the mind. Like, if anyone can do it, it's Tim Cook, to be sure.
Well,
but
and what's funny is it's Foxconn's chairman and founder, Terry Gao, who is trying to make this,
mm-hmm.
he's trying to push this, which, so Apple is apparently investigating the feasibility of moving somewhere between 15 and 30% of its production out of China.
Mm-hmm.
To places like India, Vietnam, Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And most of that makes sense because you would want to diversify.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's and keeping in mind from a tariff perspective, it's only the phones that are bound for the US that
right.
would need to be made outside of China. Although it's interesting to figure out what that would do for parts, but
yeah.
But Foxconn says, hey, we can 25% of our manufacturing and production capacity is outside of China. So if we needed to
mm-hmm.
do something elsewhere, I mean, Apple represents half of Foxconn's revenue.
Yeah.
So fascinating. This is interesting.
I'm also interested in it for a non-trade war reason. Which is that Apple tends to be really smart about this kind of stuff. You know, they were huge proponents of just-in-time sorts of things. They're always looking to achieve demand-supply balance. They're always looking for, you know, how to make sure that everybody who wants a phone on 0 day can get one. You know, like all the kind of stuff that we've seen them do, right? They've continued to hone and refine, you know, every time. Like every iPhone launch is the biggest iPhone launch there ever was. And, mm-hmm. you know, and every time... people who wanted one on 0 day can't get one because demand was too great. And every time, it's a jillion more phones, give or take, than it was last year. Right. And so, like, the scale of what they're doing, you know, and also, like the scale of what they do every September with those phones is staggering.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, like, it was like late, I think it was like late August, early September, a couple of years ago, Mr. Kelly and I were out working in the yard, and we live near a flight path, so lots of planes go overhead, and like three gigantic freight planes flew over in the space of about 10 minutes. And after the third one went by, Mr. Kelly looks at me and goes, okay, what's Apple up to?
Yeah.
Because like, everybody knows. Yeah, everybody knows that, you know, that's what it is. And, you know, like, every time I get something on zero day, you know, when the UPS guy shows up at my house, he's like, everyone's home for their deliveries today and everyone's so happy to see me. I don't know what's going on. It's, you know. He's totally kidding. And, you know, last year when last time around when he brought me my watch, I helped him figure out why his Apple Pay stuff wasn't working. So, you know.
Aww.
It
all goes around.
See? So, like, you know, Apple has always been very smart about this stuff, right? So they wanted to make sure that they weren't having a massive impact when they opened up a data center here in Oregon. So there's an Apple data center in Central Oregon. And so what did they do? They bought the hydroelectric plant near it. And so everything that that data center does is powered by the dam that's up the road a piece, as they would say in Central Oregon, from the data center itself, so that everything there is powered with hydroelectric energy. And, you know, Apple has always been smart in their approach to this kind of stuff. It hasn't always worked out. Let's talk about buying a company that makes lab-created sapphire glass. but, like, they've always tried to come at it from that angle of, like, a little bit different, you know, doing a little bit more to make sure that it's something that they have as much control over as they desire. And yes. So it absolutely makes sense that they would start making stuff. It doesn't have to be phones, but that they would start making stuff in other countries, particularly if Foxconn has the capacity and the capability to put it someplace else. You know, if this has the added bonus of making it so that Apple's day-to-day manufacturing is not politically fraught, I don't know why they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. They are the supply chain diversification or the manufacturing chain diversification. I think you're right. I think it makes sense. And it makes sense to do it in a way that creates additional sustainability or heterogeneity, like the ability, like creating some diversity, creating some potential alternate immunity in the manufacturing chain. Because as you see, as you're correctly describing it, that kind of capability means that Apple is better prepared to deal with weird stuff, like, for example, heavy tariffs on China.
Right.
Being able to make iPhones in Mexico or in Vietnam means that you don't have to worry about that quite as much.
Exactly.
Which is a good point. The other thing I wanted to bring up, which I read today, is that Google is not going to develop a successor to the Pixel Slate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard about that. But it seems like basically the small tablet or the everything south of the surface, that's a weird direction. everything that's not the iPad or the Surface doesn't really have any oxygen in the super tablet market. So that the Android tablet future is sort of Android Slate future is sort of grim.
So I think what you actually mean is the iPad. And the iPad that Microsoft makes are the only two that anyone is buying.
I think it's fair at this point to give the Surface its own identity. I mean, there was a time when it...
Sure, but people don't... Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, out in the world, the number of times that I have heard either the phrase, it's the iPad Microsoft makes or the Microsoft iPad... Or the iPad, but from Microsoft,
it's really unfair.
It's lot of them. Yeah.
That's so unfair.
I mean, I have heard just straight up, it's a Surface, you know, also. But like, isn't the Pixel like $1,000?
The Pixel Slate.
Can you get one by itself? Or, I mean, like... I guess my issue is that I feel like the Pixel Slate
starts at $800, by the way.
Okay. So the Slate always did kind of go head to head with the Surface, which really is more of a hybrid computer.
Yeah.
Than what the iPad is. So it seems weird to call the Surface a tablet, I guess, because maybe it's just because I never see one without a keyboard attached. Like I only ever see them with the little standout and the little keyboard on it and all the time.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but I don't feel like that's the same sort of thing. I don't feel like that's the same experience. And Most of the reason I'm sad that Google's getting out of the tablet market is because it was never a successor to the Slate that I wanted. It was a successor to the Nexus tablet that I had.
Yeah.
The Nexus
7. Which I still have sitting on a charging stand somewhere. Well, I mean, the successor to that is the Amazon Fire HD, for better or worse.
Yeah, but it doesn't run like full Android. It runs Amadroid, and I don't... I'm not interested in that.
I love the way that sounds like amateur. It's just Amadroid.
That's not what I want. That was the other thing that I really liked about having the tablet that I had. The Note. What was it called? I don't remember.
It was
anymore.
Called the Nexus 7.
The Nexus 7. The thing I loved about it was that it had the least amount of other crap on it because it came straight from Google. So I keep wanting to call it the Nope, and I know that's not it. Which harkens back
the
to
nope.
going.
Oh my God!
Which harkens back to CES.
That'd be fantastic.
Oh. I will never forget that banner because thank you, Ian Betteridge, for your law. Samsung put this giant banner on the side of the convention center during CES where you weren't there, were you?
No.
No, it was just me amok with Terpstra and Victor. And some AOL and Engadget people. This is still when Brett was rowdy, so we had a lot of fun. And Brett is awesome now in a completely different way. But he used to be awesome and drink a lot more, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, and, it's fair.
Yeah. So we were there and there was this... I think he posted a picture of it somewhere, and it was this giant banner that said, "Is it a phone? Is it a tablet? It's the Samsung Galaxy Note." And so we just applied Betteridge's law to it. And so, is it a phone? Nope. Is it a tablet? Nope. It's the Samsung Galaxy Nope. And so, so I feel like I've almost subliminally like reprogrammed like Mr. Robot, where like anytime anybody talks about the Galaxy Note, I always think of it as the Galaxy Nope, and it's endlessly entertaining because then I'm like, oh wait, no, that's not what that actually is. It's a different thing. I loved having an Android device that didn't have a plan, and there's no like iPod, like Android flavored iPod where you can get that same sort of experience. So I find it disappointing, and that's one of the reasons I was actually, I know this isn't really all that newsy, but it's one of the reasons I was really excited to see that the iPod got updated and that the iPad mini became an option again, a viable option again, is because it's really nice to be able to pick up a device without a service plan that's not your daily driver, so you can put a beta on it and see how your stuff runs and what it looks like and how broken it is if you turn the thing sideways and have all of that be viable. The only thing I hate to say it, but I'm sad that the iPod Touch, that you can't get something like an iPod Touch in a current screen size for what the phones are. Because the iPod Touch is still a lot smaller. And I love picking them up and playing with them because it just feels like an adorable little device now. It's practically a toy, even just compared to my 8, because I don't even have a 10 or anything. That's part of why I'm disappointed that the Android stuff is gone, is because I liked there being an option for somebody like me who wants to like go and, you know, spend $150 and get one and be done. And the battery went to crap in my Nexus 7, which is why I don't have one anymore. I'm very sad about it because the replacement battery didn't really get me anywhere.
You know what? I mean, I'll send you mine. I'm not using it if you want it. I don't mind. Well, I'll put that in the next care package.
It was cool because I also liked getting to play with it. Like, it's not going to run anything current, I don't think, anyway. So it's going to become a question of like.
It's really funny to try to run updates on that now.
Oh, I bet.
Like, yeah.
Does it just laugh at you like months, like Nelson on Simpsons? Like, you check for updates, and that's all it does. Okay.
Pretty much. I mean, it would make that sound if it was working. But no, it's functional. It's functional. I think that the iPad Mini, the return of the Mac, the return of the iPad Mini, does make a big difference to the pocket-ish device Notion. But the fact is the iPad Pro, like the 11-inch iPad Pro base model is $799. The Pixel Slate is $799. And you sort of have to ask yourself, in this form factor of device, would I rather be running Chrome OS or would I rather be running iOS or eventually iPad OS? And I think the clear answer for most people, most of the time, is iOS. Now, that said, if I were getting a second phone now, I might get a Pixel 3 or the cheap ass version of the Pixel 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible camera. The Google Assistant is great. Like I've confident that that experience would be pretty good. I just don't have any confidence that all my Android tablet experiences have been so fundamentally disappointing and empty inside. When I bought the Nexus 7, I was just like, yeah, this is not doing it for me. I have a stack, literally behind me, I have a stack of Fire 7-inch tablets.
Oh my gosh.
That because they were selling them for like $23 last year. And I'm going to send them to the synagogue for Heidi to use them for teaching because I bought more than this and I gave them away. Like I gave them as presents and I still had three left over. There's just nothing. It's very difficult to describe. There's nothing that feels good or organic or happy about using that form factor with that OS.
Yeah.
I can't explain it.
The Amazon flavor of Android, which is not quite, I mean,
well, that too.
Amazon's approach is that they want to sell you stuff. And like, this is a thing. Like the fundamental approach to things is the part that sometimes I think gets lost when we have conversations about things like security and privacy. Like all Amazon wants my information for is so that they can sell me exactly what I want so that I will buy it from them. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. And they're very upfront about that. Google goes around saying don't be evil all the time and then goes around and is evil. And the point, the reason they want any information from me is so that they can sell it to other people. I get that.
Yeah.
But like, and this is why when people talk about like, you know, we need to break stuff up, like, you know, Facebook and Google and Apple, like, no, because Apple's approach has never been that.
One of these things is not like the other.
Exactly. And the, you know, when you think about some of this stuff, like it's also a little bit of why, I think Apple gets a little bit myopic when it comes to voice assistants. So, yeah. Like, the S-Lady was never meant to be on a HomePod.
I forget that you do that. It's so funny.
Oh, my God. Someone did it. I was talking to somebody at DubDub at I think the Indie Mac party or something. And I think is where we were. And somebody was, like, saying, I don't remember which assistant name it was, but said it like three or four times. And I was like, oh God, oh God. Like every time I was like flinching. And then it must have been obvious because then it was like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm really sorry, but I've started this habit and I've had this habit for a lot of years where I have to call them A-Lady and S-Lady because I record podcasts all the time. And I don't want to set them off for people because I've done that and I don't want to do it more.
And it's distinct from the A-Hole Lady. That's someone else.
So then this person was, oh, I never thought about that. I'm like, yeah, so every time you do that, I'm just thinking, oh God, oh God, oh God, no.
We talked about this like two or three shows ago, and it was like, it was the G Lady and the S Lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I just forgot. It's charming and adorable, and I had forgotten that you do it, so I did not mean to derail you.
So here's the thing, is that the S Lady was never meant to be headless, which sounds weird, but she was always meant to have a screen and is still approached that way because, like, if you ask her a question, she will say, like, here's some stuff I found for you, but she won't read it, you know. So like if you're in the car and you ask her a question and she has like web results for you, she'll just wait, right? And then at least a couple of times I've tried it in the car, that's what's happened. And like I can't read the screen I'm driving, so that's not going to help me. Where the Google Assistant started out kind of on both at the same time. And the Amazon one wasn't really ever on a screen until recently. It was like the opposite because everything was, you know, some little black puck somewhere. So it always had to tell you stuff. And I think that when people talk about what, like, if you can talk to somebody who talks about, like, voice assistants suck, and you can get them to really sit down and elucidate for you what it is that they think is sucking, right?
Yeah.
Then you get to a very different set of parameters that people are going in with, right? So, like, some people have a hard time with, oh, she doesn't ever understand me, right? And, you know, and then, like, you get down to it, and it's like, well, 8 or 9 times out of 10, she'll understand me. But those other couple times, like, it's really frustrating. Where my experience is, she understands me at all. And the first voice assistant that ever did was the S lady. Mm-hmm. And, like, there are still those automated phone attendant things. There are still some of those that when I talk to them, they have no idea what I'm saying. Because I have a woman, I know you can't tell today, but I have a female voice. And even though my normal voice is still not super high, like, it still will confound a lot of digital assistants, which I don't understand. It's 2019. Get on the stick. But so, like, I'm happy to give her credit every single time she does anything for me, like, correctly. I'm like, oh, yay. Now, granted, I'm not asking her to do anything particularly complex, but still. Like, I can ask my A-lady for the weather. I can ask her for where's my stuff, different things like that. And that all works fine. And when I ask my phone, that all works fine. But if I try to ask anything a little more complex, like the score of the Stanley Cup final game or something like that, like, a lot of times each of them will have to go get those results and then give them to me. And yeah. The A-lady is much better at delivering that in a way that is convenient for me when I cannot see the screen. And it seems like the S-lady is screen first, and then, like, if you ask on a HomePod, for example, maybe she will try to read something to you, or she'll tell you, like, you should look on your phone instead or something. And I think if you get down to it with a lot of people, I think that's the part that's frustrating.
Yeah. And I have found what's fascinating is now the G-lady seems far more likely to react to something that she hears said in the program, in the audio program that she is actually playing.
Oh.
I love how we've anthropomorphized these things. But my Google Home, mm-hmm. I don't need to say the G lady. It's a different, no. It's a phrase.
Yeah.
The Google Home will be, I'll be playing the radio or something, and suddenly we'll start piping up defining a term that was mentioned on the radio. What? Are you not aware of what? Of course, no. Of course, you're not aware. Right. You're not sentient. But isn't there some algorithm that's like that is pre-processing the audio that it's actually being played to make sure it doesn't inadvertently trigger?
You mean like when Microsoft put out that commercial where, like, Aaron Paul was like, "Hey Xbox, play Call of Duty," or whatever it was, and then it screwed up everybody's TV inputs, which is way funnier to me than it probably should have been.
Snorf.
Yes,
it's all very funny. Well, here we are stuck in a world where was it LG? And I think it was Samsung warning people to beware of malware on their TVs.
Yes.
This is not the internet we were promised when I was a kid.
I just, by the way, like, while we're talking about voice assistants, though.
Yes.
I occasionally get hassled by Mr. Kelly because more often than not, I will say, please.
Yes.
Turn off all the lights, please.
To the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. A-lady, turn off all the lights, please.
A lady, you sound like the Beastie Boys.
I wasn't sure if you were going Beastie Boys or Martin Lewis.
It could have been either one.
You know, yeah.
could have definitely been Martin Lewis. Ah, lady, hello.
But it made me think, like, you know what would be awesome, and if anyone can afford this, it's Jeff Bezos, right? Like, you should get like a penny in your account for every time that you ask her something and say please and then say thank you when she's done. Like, they would know. And would it kill you to be civil? And maybe if people did it all the time,
this is brilliant.
People would do it more. If people did it more, then people would do it more, right?
This is amazing. Like, yeah, would it trouble you terribly? You get, you know, the Amazon donates a penny to Greenpeace. Or, you know,
yeah.
please adjust the thermostat.
Or like hook it to the Amazon Smile. Like, right? Like if you already have that set up for you that when you shop that money goes to a charity or something, you know. They have that Amazon Smile program. Like set that up
penny to your chosen charity.
Yeah, like every time you do that, it's a penny.
Is this just spitballing right now, or you've been thinking about this for a while?
No, I put it on Twitter like last night or night before or something because I was like,
I think this should happen. I think this should. I agree with you. I think this should happen. I think this is a fantastically terrifying piece of social engineering that should totally be happening right now. Because everybody says what we need is civility. What do you want to... How do you drive civility? Right. You pay people to be civil.
Right?
It's the American way.
Exactly. Amazon can afford it, and it wouldn't kill you to be nice to the Echo base. Right? Like, come on.
I love the way your brain works, but rarely so much as when you come up with just a brilliant idea. Love it. So listeners, here's your fortnightly question, which you can let us know if you follow us on Twitter. You can tweet us at @_aftershow. The website is aftershowpodcast.com. You can also find Kelly on micro.blog. You can find her on Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. You can find her at @verso. Me, you can find at @MikeTRose. And this weekend you'll find me driving back and forth to Massachusetts. But if you tweet us @_aftershow, tell us, listeners, whether you are polite to your smart speaker, because I know that people like Tony Walla or Kelly O'Coin or Deidre or Brianna or Phone Boy or Info Driveway or Chris Fuller. Hi, Chris Fuller. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Chris Fuller.
I know our loyal listeners definitely are polite. You are all well-bred. You are all brought up in the right way. So I believe that you are polite to your smart speakers. Tell us if this is a thing that you are doing. Are you polite to your A-lady? You better be polite to your A-lady. Otherwise, your B-lady is going to come along. Never mind. It's a whole different thing. She will rapidly turn into a B-lady if you are not polite to your A-lady. I wasn't sure where the joke was when we started this through like a month ago with the A-lady. I believe we found it. I believe we've excavated the comedy in this about as far as it will go. Anyway, we've driven Kelly off the show. Are you polite to your smart speaker, to your A-lady or your G-lady or your S-lady? I have a theory. I'm going to put it out there. I don't want to prime the pump or anything, but I suspect that fewer people say please and thank you to the S-lady because, as you pointed out, the S-lady has a face. She has another interface. She has another way of interacting with you. And the A lady and the G lady are primarily, it's like talking to someone on the phone.
Yeah.
It's far less likely that you have that visual interface. Right. Although, for Father's Day, my brother did get my dad a Google Home Hub that we were supposed to be sending pictures to.
Ooh.
So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah.
But this is the question of the week. Are you polite to your smart assistant or your smart speaker or your HomePod? Let us know. Tweet us @_aftershow. And if we skipped you on the shout outs this week, we apologize. We did definitely want to catch Tony Walla because we missed him a couple shows in a row.
And I'm sad about that. I'm really sorry, Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony. But we are looking forward to hearing from all of you. Kelly, anything else you want the people to know before we sign off for the night?
You know, there was, and it has completely left my head. What I will say is that if anyone has any home remedies for when your voice gets a little rough around the edges, I would love some because I'm really tired of sounding like this, and it would be great.
Hey, A-lady, order Slippery Elm lozenges for Kelly. Slippery Elm, that's what it's called.
Okay.
Look it up. Check it out. It's what singers, opera singers, and musicians
use. Oh, okay.
It does work. But you can't use it too much because it causes mucus. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We have been not so stuffy Mike and horribly hoarse Kelly, and we will be back with you again in a couple weeks. Talk to you soon.